Clinton, run next door and see if Carol's all right, she told him, the panic registering in her voice. My God, she thought, as he left hurriedly out of the back door, if she had talked to the man she'd have been the only person yet who had actually communicated, face to face, with one of them. It seemed like an eternity before Clinton came back, Carol following him. Pauline gasped in relief. She was all right. In fact, she had rarely looked better, positively beaming. She and Billy liked Carol from the moment they had first met her. Demure and shy, she had a natural warmth and sweetness when you got to know her and was easy to talk to and get along with. Hello, love, how are you then? She said, the moment saw Pauline. Sorry I've not dropped in for a bit, but it with work and everything, well, you know what I mean. Pauline cut her short. Never mind that, love. Listen, what's all this about these men who came calling just now? Carol had a bewildered expression on her face and was shaking her head. Don't ask me, Pauline. I'm still trying to work it out. It was really strange. I saw this fabulous looking car in the first of all, and wondered who on earth you knew owned a car like that. I'd never seen anything like before. That's the first thing that I thought looked a bit strange, and also that although I'd been standing right the windows, I didn't hear it crunch on the gravel, like I normally would have done. It was just the all of a sudden. Anyhow, I glanced out of the window and saw this strange looking man walking up the garden path to your front door and after a little time, come back down again and go round the side of the house, presumably to the back door. I remember wondering why Clint wasn't answering the door, as I felt sure he was in. Anyway, after a little while, in fact, in an impossibly quick time, he was back in front of the house again, looking up at it. At that point I left the cottage for a moment by the back door in my kitchen, to put some garbage out in the bin. That's when I got frightened. No sooner was I outside and putting it in the dustbin, when suddenly, there he was, at my shoulder, standing right next to me. Now, Pauline, as you well know, there is absolutely no way anybody could get round the house and into that backyard in less than about 3 or 4 minutes, yet within about 20 seconds of seeing him in front of the house, there he was, suddenly appearing next to me. I can't tell you how startled I was, I didn't know what to think. Anyway, then he said to me, in this very flat, expressionless voice, "Where is Pauline Coombs? When will she be back?" I told him I didn't know, because I didn't trust him. I mean, as far as I knew, you didn't know anyone who looked like him or drove a car like that, so how did he know I wasn't Pauline Coombs? He really frightened me. I'll never forget his face, that stranger-looking hair, drawn back off this really high forehead, those glazed, unblinking eyes and his skin that was the strangest thing of all. It was just like wax or plastic, absolutely smooth, shin-looking. Anyway, when I told him you weren't at home and I didn't know what time you'd be back, I turned to go into the cottage and when I glanced over my shoulder as I closed the door, he was gone. Just like that. Gone. Next thing I know, he and the other man are back in the car outside the front of the cottage and it's leaving up the drive. Then, within a matter of seconds, your car arrived from the direction in which they had left, so I figured, well, you must have passed them and I wondered why you hadn't stopped to speak to them. She smiled, momentarily, then became serious. By the way Pauline and Clinton were looking at one another, she knew instantly that there was something more sinister about her mysterious experience than she might at first have thought. Pauline, who were they? Who were those two people? Pauline remained silent. What could she say? She didn't want to tell Carol what she thought, for fear of being laughed at or even, possibly, frightening Carol as much as she, herself, was frightened. Pauline? She had no alternative. Carol, it's difficult to explain, but we don't think those couple were human. I know it sounds incredible, both Billy and I saw that figure at the window, as you know. And since then, I've seen another figure out of the same window and the twins have seen one in the lower field. Not only that, but Mark, our nephew, has been approached by one and so has another boy near here. There's definitely something going on, Carol, there honestly is. Lily and I have both been wondering what it all means, what it's leading up to. Perhaps it was an actual confrontation and today was supposed to. She bit her lip, fighting to keep the sobs back. Perhaps today they were going to make some sort or, well, I don't know. Clinton comforted her as she wept. Carol came over and held her hand. Look, love, she said, in that comforting voice that only nurses have, don't upset yourself. With all that you've been through and all that's supposed to have been happening in the area, we're all probably letting our imaginations away with us. What happened today was probably nothing at all. Pauline looked up at her angrily. No, Carol, no. You know that's not true. There's no normal explanation for what happened today. It's virtually impossible for a car to arrive in the drive without being heard, and it's certainly impossible for one to leave at the same time as I arrived, without passing me. And what about those men? Why were both you and Clinton so automatically frightened of them? Why did they both look the same, with high foreheads, strange unblinking eyes and complexions like wax? How do you explain how one of them was at the front of the house 1 minute, and right at your side a few seconds later at the back of the house? Carol pulled a face and shrugged. All right, I know it sounds impossible, but what are you suggesting? What are you suggesting they were? You're not trying to tell me they were? The words hung in the air. She looked quickly across at Clinton. He avoided her gaze. My God. She released Pauline's hand and went and sat down in the chair opposite. It seems impossible. I mean, how could they have been? You mean they looked strange because it was all an illusion, a sort of disguise they adopted to be more readily acceptable? But what did they want here? Why did they come? Pauline shook her head and sighed. Carol, we just don't know, love. We don't know what any of it means. You don't know the half of it. They, whoever or whatever they are, just keep coming back, and when they do, all sorts of things keep happening to us. Ever since it first started happening, 4 months ago, nothing's been the same. We've lost count of the number of television sets that have overloaded and burned out their wiring, and 4 cars have gone the same way. There's an impossible drain on our electricity supply as the whole house seems to be in the grip of some sort of electrical force field. The kids have had inexplicable rashes on their feet and legs and feverish headaches, and I've suffered some sort of ultraviolet irritation in my eyes, and my arm swelled up painfully for weeks. We've even had to have Blackie put to sleep because the effect of seeing one of these figures drove him insane. Carol sat forward in her chair and looked intently at her. Look, Pauline, you've got to do something about all this. You can't just let things drag on. Have you got anyone helping you? Who have you told about this? We're trying to keep it as much to ourselves as possible. Who would believe us? Asked Pauline. But you can't keep it to yourself, came Carol's angry retort. It sounds to me as if all this is leading up to something. You could be in very real danger, all of you. Pauline said nothing. She knew her friend was right. Chapter 6, it was a beautiful view, thought Pauline to herself as she stood in her customary position at the kitchen window, surveying the country scene behind the farmhouse. On June evenings like this, it was difficult to believe that such tranquility was being undermined by all that was happening to them. Carol was right, of course. They had to do something before something happened to them. But what? She loved the farm and would hate to leave it, as picnic had made her feel inclined to on those two occasions, but it certainly did feel as though these creatures, aliens, or whatever they were, seemed intent on driving them out. She sighed to herself and got on with preparing the potatoes for that night's supper. The children were already back from school and Clinton had just got in from work at the farm next door. It was 7 o'clock. Billy would be up from the sheds in a minute. Ravenous as usual. Damn. The telephone. Trust somebody to phone right in the middle of her preparing supper. Clinton, she shouted out of the kitchen and across the hall to the front room where he'd be watching television. Get that, will you, and tell whoever it is that I'll call back. She heard him answer the phone. Then silence for a minute. Mum. It's Rosa. She says it's important. Clinton was looking around the door, a frown on his face. She sounds in a real state, Mum. Pauline felt herself tense up. What now? She picked up the phone apprehensively. Rosa? How are you, love? She felt nervous about asking such a leading question these days. Oh, Pauline. Thank God you're there. I've got to talk to you. Clinton was right. She did sound in a bit of a state, excitable and nervous. Look, Pauline, I don't want to frighten you any more than you and the family already have been, but I had to talk to someone about what's just happened to us and I thought you would be the best person. I can't understand it, I really can't. She was gabbling now. Pauline tried to calm her. Slowly, Rosa. Take it slowly. What happened? It's like this, she began, slower and clearer now. While I was out for a minute this afternoon, down in the town to do some shopping with Frank, I left my daughter, Anna, here, you know, the one who is at university in Madrid and is over here on holiday at the moment. Anyway, when we got back, Anna was in a terrible state. Trembling she was. Apparently she'd looked out of the window at the front of the hotel and seen this enormous silver car standing there. It was like no car she'd ever seen before, and what she couldn't understand was why she didn't hear it arrive. Our gravel drive is dreadfully noisy, as you know, and she had been standing so close to the window, she should have heard it quite clearly. Pauline felt a tightening in her stomach and began to tremble slightly. She knew what Rosa was going to say next. Anyway, it wasn't that frightened her, it was what the men in the car looked like. I say men, but she swore to me that they just didn't look normal, didn't look human. One of them apparently stayed in the car, the other one came to the door. She said the one at the door wore some sort of dark-colored suit and walked in this strange, static way. It was his face that she says frightened her the most. She says the forehead was much larger than it should have been, the eyes were really piercing and the skin looked like it was made of wax. Another funny thing was that he asked for me by name and asked where I was, although I know I've never met him. How did he know that Anna wasn't me? How did he know what I looked like, when he'd never met me? That's what anybody would do, normally, isn't it? Ask the person who answers the door if they are the person they are looking for. Anna was dreadfully frightened, and so am I. Pauline, I got back to the hotel in the car with Frank only a minute or two after these men left, but although Anna insisted that we must have passed them on the way up our long drive, we passed nobody. That damn car just vanished into thin air. I tell you, Pauline, it's really shaken us up. Anna in particular. She doesn't know anything about what's been going on around here, or what's happened to Frank or me. So you can imagine the shock it gave her. Rosa waited for a response. There was none. Pauline? There was a long pause, while Pauline steadied herself on the other end of the phone, breathing deeply to calm her voice. None of what you've told me surprises me, she said softly. Exactly the same thing happened here, to Clinton, only 2 days ago. Pauline, no. What's going on?
I don't know, Rosa, I really don't know.
Carol. You know Carol, our neighbor, saw them, too. She reckons we must all get somebody to help us. The authorities, or somebody. Rosa interrupted her. That's the other reason I phoned you, Pauline. She began, slowly and earnestly. Remember I told you that I was going to do just that, after I saw those creatures in the field behind the hotel? Remember I said I was going to get in touch with Nicholas Edwards, our MP, and get him to find out if the RAF or Ministry of Defense knew what was going on? Well, I did just that. There was a long pause. Pauline, I can't believe what's happened since I wrote that letter. First this important RAF type, an officer he was, from Broadhaven, comes down to the hotel and gives me a whole book of questions to answer about what I've seen and asks me not to talk about what happened. Then I got these strange letters. One from Nicholas Edwards and one from the Ministry of Defense. They both came in the same envelope. The one from Nicholas Edwards, on House of Commons notepaper, dated June 17, reads like this: Dear Mrs. Grenville, I enclose a copy of a letter I have received from the Ministry of Defense following the representations I made on your behalf, but I am afraid this seems to throw no light on your encounter. Yours sincerely, Nicholas Edwards, MP. The letter he enclosed, from the Ministry of Defense, dated June 15, suppose 1977 RORM,
on Ministry of Defense notepaper, reads like this: "Dear Nicholas, my department have investigated the report about an unidentified flying object which you referred to me on behalf of Mrs. Rose Grenville of the Haven Fort Hotel. I regret to say, however, that although an RAF officer has visited Mrs. Grenville, we are unable to offer any further information. It is true that the Royal Observer Corps have a post in the adjoining field, but there is no evidence that their activities could have seemed unusual in any way, and we have no record of any other unusual activity in the area. I am sorry I cannot be more helpful. It's signed by James Welly, beloved, Parliamentary Under Secretary of State for Defence." What do you make of that, Pauline? Pauline could tell by the tone of Rosa's voice that she was as baffled as she was. "Pauline, I tell you, there's something damn funny going," Rosa continued, her voice now sounding agitated. "Do they take us for fools? I mean to say, first the Secretary of State for Defense says that the RAF, unable to offer any further information about what's going on, in other words, they can't explain what the spaceship was or what the aliens were. And then he says we have no record of any unusual activity in the area. Pauline, that's ridiculous. He does have records of unusual activity in the area. Apart from what I told him myself, he must have records of the dozens of stories that have been appearing in our local papers and the national papers about what's been happening around one of his top secret RAF bases. No records. It's a well-known fact that over 100 people have reported seeing unidentified flying objects, and over a dozen people have seen spaceman-like figures in this area over the past few months. How can he tell the Member of Parliament for this area that he has no records of unusual activity? It's simply not true." Rosa fell silent again for a minute. Pauline could hear the rustling of newspaper in the background. Then she started to speak again. "And Pauline, here's another thing. How can the Under Secretary of State for Defense tell our MP that he has no record of any unusual activity in the area, when a spokesman for the Ministry of Defense told the Sun newspaper, 'Only last month, we have heard of unexplained objects in the West Wales area. The people who report these sightings are not nutcases, they are genuinely sincere people, genuinely concerned. We investigate every report on this assumption. We do not discount the possibility of intelligent life in outer space. There have been a flood of reports from West Wales. The ground sightings do not, in time or place, fit in with any of our operations.'" Another silence. She could hear Rosa sighing. "Pauline, say something. What the hell do you make of all this? First an RAF man asks me lots of questions and asks me to keep quiet about what I've seen. Then the Ministry of Defense publicly state that they've had dozens of similar reports they can't explain, and that they don't discount the possibility of there being intelligent life in outer space. And now this. The Under Secretary of State for Defense, telling our MP that he hasn't, in fact, heard about any unusual things happening in the area and that he can't help us. Why are they turning their backs on us, pretending that none of this is happening to us? They know what's happening, and they must know how threatening it's all becoming. Why don't they want to help us?" Rosa was now sounding very upset. Pauline knew she should try to calm her down, console her, but she would find it difficult. For heaven's sake, she was feeling as panicky as Rosa. Everything she had said was true. It was obvious that the authorities, the police and the Ministry of Defense, knew exactly what was happening to them. But it was equally obvious that they could be of no help at all, if the worst ever came to the worst. They had as good as admitted as much. Basically, then, she and Rosa and their families and the rest of the neighborhood had been left to fend for themselves. She tried to sound calm. "Rosa, I know exactly what you mean. I understand perfectly. It is obvious that these Ministry of Defense people know exactly what's going on. Just like our local police have already admitted that they do, but I suppose they think that it's now better to investigate what's going on in secrecy. The moment that they tell us, or anyone in the area, that there's something extraterrestrial going on that they can't explain and have no control over, everybody's going to panic, aren't they? It's obvious." She was pleased at the note of calm she had managed to bring to her voice. She was grateful Rosa couldn't see her shaking hands, though. There was another long pause after she'd spoken, Then Rosa said, I suppose you're right, love, but what do you think they're doing about it?
Rosa, I don't know. I just don't know. Perhaps nobody ever will. All we can do is assume, and hope, they're doing something.
She fell silent. She could console Rosa only up to a point, feeling as shaken as she was herself. She promised she'd speak to her again soon, made her goodbyes and hung up. Clinton was looking at her intently from the other side of the room, with Billy, who'd come in from work while she was talking, standing behind his chair.
What was all that about, love? Asked Billy, his voice stern, direct and worried.
Rosa, was it? What's the problem?
Pauline explained everything and Billy, frowning intensely, walked slowly over to her and sat down next to her.
Bloody hell, he muttered to himself, head held in hands, this is all getting to be too much. I just don't understand anymore.
We're living in the middle of a proven electrical force field and can show the inexplicable damage resulting from it. We've had several corroborated sightings, strange spacecraft in the sky and on the ground, and several encounters with spacemen of some sort, and have the radiation traces, scorch marks on the ground and inexplicable physical disabilities to prove it. It's all happening within a stone's throw of all these important Army, Navy and Air Force bases, and what happens?
Nothing.
The police?
All we get is we're as frightened as you are. We've no procedure to cover this sort of thing.
Ministry of Defense? They admit something beyond knowledge is going on, but deny it in our case.
So, we're supposed to suffer alone?
I'll tell you, love, we're not going to. That settles it. If anything else happens, we'll start thinking very seriously about getting away from this place, before the worst comes to the worst.
7. That was August gone. Billy tore off the page of the calendar that hung in the kitchen with careful deliberation and threw it into the waste basket. That made 2 months since anything unusual had happened to the family. July and August had been as quiet and normal as the family could have wished. No fuses had blown, no light bulbs had fused. The television and the car were both working all right. They had seen no strange objects in the sky, no alien figures on the ground. Strange, he thought to himself, but the encounters had stopped happening almost exactly when Pauline began her annual job down in the turkey factory in Milford Haven, where she always worked for 6 months of the year in the packing department, getting the poultry ready for the Christmas season. He was normally grateful just for the extra money the job brought in, but this year, well, the results were even more fortunate. Perhaps that UFO enthusiast who'd written to them a while back had been right after all. They had, predictably, been deluged with letters from UFO investigators, cranks and all sorts when their story first became public, all of them with theories about what that first light had been and who the man at the window really was. One of the people who had written had insisted that such phenomena generally happened to people, or around people who were particularly psychic. Perhaps, he had suggested, Pauline was the psychic power that was attracting the extraterrestrial visitations?
Billy remembered how they'd laughed at the suggestion to begin with, but since then he'd thought more deeply about it and it had made him wonder. Certain thoughts kept recurring in his mind. Hadn't it been Pauline who had first seen and been obsessed with that light she saw in the sky? Wasn't it she who had first seen the man at the window? Didn't that silver hand that Lan saw enter the bedroom that night touch Pauline, and her alone, on the shoulder? And now that she spent most of the time away from the house, hadn't all the strange happenings stopped as suddenly as they started? He shook his head. Nobody had mentioned the events that had happened between January and June, not since things had returned to normal. Nothing had been reported in the area, and it was as if everyone in the neighborhood was trying to forget. They were thankfully in the middle of a glorious summer in one of the most picturesque parts of the country, and relishing it. Never mind whether it was some psychic power Pauline possessed that had caused the phenomenon they had witnessed, or whether it wasn't. Whatever it had been, it seemed to be over, and hopefully for good. He busied himself around the kitchen, laying the table for lunch. Pauline would be dashing back from Milford Haven to make lunch for him and Clinton and the kids, who were on summer holidays. She never had much time and was always grateful for the little help he could find time to give her.
Pity the kids couldn't rally round a little more to help her around the house, he thought to himself. But never mind. They were on holiday and the weather was great, so let them enjoy themselves playing out in the fields. Midday. Pauline would be back shortly. He'd laid the table, he'd just about got time to have a cup of tea and a cigarette before she and all the kids came in. Damn it. He thought to himself, where the hell was that carton of cigarettes that Pauline had bought yesterday and put on the kitchen sideboard? She always bought a carton of 200 cigarettes on a Monday and left them there, but this was the second time they'd suddenly gone missing from where she normally always left them. They'd naturally suspected the kids the first time, although they were very honest children, but had been assured it wasn't them and had believed them. And now it had happened again. He thumped the sideboard angrily. It was too much. A lot of things had suddenly started going missing recently. A couple of other times, small sums of money had vanished from their customary cubbyhole in the front room, only to reappear, in exactly the same denominations, a couple of days later. Two cardigans that he'd been given on separate Christmases, but had never worn, had also gone missing, never to return. None of it was serious, just damn irritating. Pauline and he knew their kids and they certainly weren't dishonest. They just couldn't have been responsible. As a family they were very organized and settled in their ways, as well, things never normally got lost or misplaced so frequently. Not to worry, probably just one of those things, he reasoned. The front door banged. It was Pauline, swiftly followed by Clinton and the kids, who'd heard her arrive and hurried in for their lunch, all pushing, shoving, laughing and generally carousing around. Neither he nor Pauline told them to quieten down. It had been too long since they'd heard that much laughter around the house. The more they had heard of it in the past few weeks, the happier they'd felt. It meant that things really were back to normal. Billy stopped the tractor and looked at his watch. 5 o'clock. He'd knock off early this afternoon. Plowing under a hot sun was certainly exhausting. A glass of cold orange juice, a cold shower and a chance to put his feet up for a while was just what he needed before the house filled up with kids again for another rowdy supper time. He kicked the tractor into gear and chugged off across the final field that led to the drive up to the farm. Funny, he thought, where's gear and? It was normally a devil of a task to get him off a tractor, once he'd been allowed to do a little plowing himself, yet he couldn't see him anywhere. He scanned the horizon. Very odd. He must have gone to the farm as well, for some reason. Kay, some too much for you? He found Gian back at the farm, just as expected, near the stationary tractor and leaning against the garden wall outside the house. He looked white as a sheet, his head bowed. What's the matter, old son? He asked, patting him on back. I told you before, if you're plowing with your back at the sun, put a hanky on the back of your neck or you will get sunstroke. Feels bad, does it? Gian looked up at him, a frightened look in his eyes. Wasn't the sun, Dad? Billy felt his fists clench in anxious anticipation of what was about to hear. I saw something, Dad. I saw something in there, in the house. What do you mean something? What sort of thing? Where? Gian looked awkward, embarrassed for a minute. Come on, son, spit it out. Billy insisted. What did you and where? Leon started mumbling his explanation. Well, I'd pulled up in the tractor, I wanted to get a drink, I was not, when I looked through the window of the front room, there in front of us, and saw this black shape moving out in the room. Billy was getting irritated at the ambiguity of what Leon was saying, and unnerved. Black shape? What you mean black shape? Shape of what? Leon sighed and shrugged, looking more awkward than before. Dad, he said pleadingly, I don't know, that's the whole point. I just saw this hovering black shape, sort of tall and thin and taking up the sort of space a very large man would take up, just moving around the room, first to the window near the television, then over to the other side of the room. You didn't see any exact shape? Asked Billy, glancing nervously towards the window himself. No. Just a sort of undulating shape, like sort of liquid the way it moved around, insisted Gian, and it frightened me. I just stood and watched it for a minute, and then moved away so I couldn't see it anymore. You didn't go into the house then? Gia'an looked surprised at the suggestion.
No, Dad, I told you, it frightened me,